Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
I am Velocity Child, and every Friday at the stroke of midnight, ride the broomstick with fallen woman, stirring up the cauldron at Radio Free Brooklyn.
There's an old woman who lives in a hidden place that everyone knows but few have ever seen. And she's called by many names. La Huesera, Bone Woman. La Tarapera, the Gatherer. And La Loba, the Wolf Woman. Now the sole work of La Loba is the collecting of bones. She is known to collect and preserve especially that which is in danger of being lost to the world, and her cave is filled with the bones of all manner of desert creatures. But her specialty is said to be wolves. And when she has assembled an entire skeleton, when the last bone is in place, she sits by the fire and contemplates which song she will sing. And when she's certain, she stands over the criatura and sings out. And that is when the rib bones and the leg bones of the wolf begin to flesh out and the creature becomes furred, and La Loba sings more and the wolf creature begins to breathe. La Loba sings so deeply that the floor of the desert shakes, and as she sings, the wolf opens its eyes and leaps up and runs away down the canyon. And somewhere in its running, the wolf is suddenly transformed into a laughing woman who runs free toward the horizon.
We are extremely pleased that you are here. You are knowing what you are wanting. You are enjoying the expansion of your desires. Isn't it good? That non-physical part of you trust in the well-being of the universe, trust in the laws of the universe, understands the power of law of attraction, knows that you are a vibrational being, and knows that law of attraction will respond to your vibrational nature, and knows that you have more control over your vibrational output than you often exercise, and knows that in any event, it always turns out all right, and knows that you cannot get it done and you will never get it wrong. And the reason that you cannot get it wrong is because it can never be done, which means no matter where you stand, you have a fresh start now. Non-physical part of you trusts in the well-being of the universe, trusts in the laws of the universe, understands the power of law of attraction, knows that you are a vibrational being and knows that law of attraction will respond to your vibrational nature and knows that you have more control over your vibrational output than you often exercise and knows that in any event, it always turns out all right and knows that you cannot get it done and you will never get it wrong. And the reason that you cannot get it wrong is because it can never be done, which means no matter where you stand, you have a fresh start now. Who have come here with great reason, and you are so much more than you see here in these physical bodies. And when you allow yourself to relax a little from where you are and turn and go with the flow, you are going to discover in your first day of making a decision about that, the power of this stream. You are powerful creators who have come here with great reason, and you are so much more than you see here in these physical bodies. And when you allow yourself to relax a little from where you are and turn and go with the flow, you are going to discover in your first day of making a decision about that, the power of this stream. You're going to discover the power of this stream and the power of the law of attraction and the power of your worthiness and the eternal nature of your being.
Life is supposed to be good for you. It is supposed to feel good. It is supposed to feel fine.
so much more than you see here in these physical bodies. You are so much more, so much more, so much more. You are powerful, powerful creators who have come here with great reason.
Well, the simple part that most people don't understand is that every thought we think and every word we speak is creating our future. It's as though our thoughts go out into the universe and are accepted and brought back to us as experience. Now, that is a very simple thing, but most people don't get it. They don't understand it. They've never heard it before, and they think it's ridiculous. But if you can really accept the fact that every time you think a thought and every time you speak a word, you are literally painting your future, making your dinner, whatever you want to call it, you are creating. And you're creating your own life. And this is simple, but it's not easy to accept. But once you accept it, then you can start deliberately creating what you want in your life. And you begin to be aware of what you don't want in your life and how you are contributing to it. Now, I think this has been around forever, but for some reason in the last 20 years, the universe has wanted this to go out among all the people, or all the people that are ready for it. See, most of us just think, and we don't pay any attention to what we're thinking. We're just doing it. But that's something you need to train yourself to do, to begin to train yourself to be aware of what you're thinking. And one of the ways to do that is to periodically say to yourself, what am I thinking? Would I like this thought to create my life? Would I like to have the experience that this thought could bring to me? Now, it takes a while to do that, but even if we could begin on the smallest level to be aware of our thinking, we can start to make changes. To begin with, you start by doing what we call doing affirmations, and that is making positive statements about your life that are positive. And you do them deliberately. You might do them in the morning, you might do them at noon, you might do them at night, you might do them, you know, twice a day or whatever. But you do this and you let this become a habit. And as you start to do them, things will begin to change, maybe on a very small level. I call it getting the green lights in the parking places. I mean, they're not huge things in your life, but it can be very nice when you get three green lights in a row and you're in a hurry. Yeah. Doing an affirmation is either writing it down, writing it on the wall or the mirror, or using just saying it. What I like people to do is to stand in front of a mirror and do their affirmations, because there's something very powerful about looking in your own eyes and getting and accepting yourself, or noticing that you reject yourself when you're saying something positive about yourself. So that would be a very beginning way to start. Say in the morning, you get up in the morning, you go to the mirror and This is a big one, and it's hard for lots of people. But you look in the mirror, and I say, I love you. I really, really love you. And to begin with, that can be so hard for people because they think of all the things that they think are wrong with them. But if you can start your day saying that, it's very powerful. Remember, I'd like to think the universe is listening to everything you say and everything you think and saying, okay, you can get that. So then it starts to bring you in and bring things into you. And I know this sounds far-fetched, but it's amazing how it works. If you do a good, general, positive statement for yourself, the universe will figure out how to manifest that, how to bring that about in your life. So things could happen that you wouldn't expect at all, but they will happen. If you think of doing your positive affirmations, it's like planting a seed in the ground. It's not necessarily true at the moment, but it is something you want to have be true. So you put the seed in, and you plant a seed, and you expect it to grow. Or you maybe plant three seeds, just in case. You expect them to grow, and you don't wait 2 days and then dig in the earth and say, what's happening? You expect that thing to grow because you know there's a law and a process, and the seed will grow if it is in the right soil and it has the right amount of moisture. Making it really a habit and doing it every day, doing something every morning when you wake up, that's a really good time. And another good time is when you go to sleep at night. And gratitude works a lot. If just being grateful for everything. The more, I always say the universe loves gratitude. The more you're grateful for what the good is in your life, the more good you get to be grateful about. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, if somebody gives you a present and or gives me a present and I say, oh my God, I hate that color and it doesn't fit, and you know, that person will never give me another present. Mm-hmm. But if you say, oh, it's wonderful and thank you, I really adore it, it's great, that person is probably going to want to buy you a present every time they see something they think you would like. And it's like that with the universe. The universe loves gratitude. If you have very strong beliefs within you that you don't deserve good things in your life, mm-hmm. and a lot of people have that, then there can be delays. And sometimes people say, well, affirmations don't work, I've done them. But when they're doing, for instance, prosperity affirmations, and they've done some prosperity affirmations, and they say, it doesn't work, nothing's happening. And I say, well, all right, how many prosperity affirmations did you do in a day? And they'll say, three, probably. And they say, all right, how many poverty affirmations did you do this day? And that could be 300, depending on where you're coming from and what is running through your mind. See, I have this, one of my thoughts about life is that only good lies before me. And I have been saying this for many years. So it doesn't really matter to me what happens in life, because I know it's going to be good. Well, there are lots of things you can do to help you become more conscious of what is going on. And because so many of our belief systems really are unconscious or subconscious, we're not aware of them. They're just things that were bred into us as we were children, is to take a little time to figure out what they are. And I always say a really good exercise is to take a big sheet of paper and write on top of it, say, what I think about men. And then another one, what I think about women, what do I think about money, what do I think about any subject you can think of. And just write all the things that come out of your thoughts. And whether they sound good or not, just write them down. And any one subject, if you just write them all down and then look at them and see how many are positive and how many are negative. And if you can take those negative ones and turn them around, make them into positive affirmations, then you can start clearing up what you believe about, say, money that is not positive for you, mm-hmm. and or is keeping you from bringing money in. And you can do that with lots of things in your life, so you can really begin to realize what you do believe about these things. So you can't change your thoughts if you don't know what your thoughts are. There is a law of thinking. and we are beginning to learn about it. And it is like a computer. If you have this gorgeous computer put in front of you and you don't know what to do with it, it's a piece of junk. But if you learn the language of the computer, miracles happen. And that is what the law of thinking is. When you learn how it works, miracles happen. What you think and what you believe is what will come true for you. Your thoughts create your life. It's that simple. And when we can get that, we can make enormous changes.
Well, I think it really starts with realizing that you don't love yourself, that most people don't. Most people feel they're not good enough, that they haven't done it right, they won't do it right, they'll never be enough, and they're definitely not lovable. And when we come from that space, it's very hard to create things for ourselves that are really good. So in the early days when I worked with people, I used to fix this problem and fix that problem, and you'd have this a health thing, and we'd work on that, and we'd work on this. And one day I discovered, much to my amazement, that if I would help people learn to love themselves, to really accept themselves as they are, we didn't have to work around problems, because it was almost like a miracle. Everything seemed to fall away. It's a hard one for people, because we grow up believing that we're not good enough and nothing is right. I remember lots of times I would ask people, well, what is really wrong with you? What have you done that is so terrible that you're not acceptable to yourself? And I never, ever, ever got an answer that made any sense. You know, they might say something like, well, I'm too fat. Well, so, you know. But when you talk about loving yourself, a lot of people think that that's vanity, but it isn't really. It has nothing to do with that. That is narcissistic. But to really care for you and to acknowledge that you are an important being, it's almost like in the Bible they would say, you recognize that you are a child of God, that therefore you are perfect. But even if you're not a biblical person, if you can recognize that you are a being that has self-worth, if you can really recognize your own worth, then you start to treat yourself differently. And I think that's what's so very important about loving yourself, is you stop beating yourself up, you stop making yourself wrong, you stop talking about how awful you are, and you stop saying things like, I'm really stupid and stuff, and you start to treat yourself with a certain amount of respect. And this makes an enormous difference, because what you give out in life is what comes back to you. So if you're giving out a feeling of, I'm okay, I'm good enough as I am, and I am acceptable, and I love life, and I love me, and you start having gratitude for yourself and for life, then life treats you differently, because you are having a different vibration that you're giving out and getting back. And that's when things really start to flow. Now, a lot of people don't realize it, but you have to practice. You just have to start it. And that's why I try to get people to do a lot of mirror work. If you look in the mirror, just simple things like looking in the mirror in your own eyes and saying, I love you. I really, really love you. And it helps if you use your name, Louise, I love you. I really love you. It gets to that little child inside that has been rejected for so long, and it breaks open sort of a dam or a door or whatever you want to call it, and it's like little miracles start to happen. Lots of little good things happen, and the universe loves grateful people. The more grateful you are, the more you get to be grateful about. It's that simple. Life is really very simple. We make it enormously complicated, but it doesn't have to be. Everybody's on a journey from the time we're born till the time we leave. But when we go on a spiritual journey, it seems to be more conscious, and we begin to make conscious choices about life instead of just going on and getting up in the morning and doing our stuff and then going to bed. We begin to make conscious choices of our thoughts and our actions and even the foods we eat and things like that. And it's putting your foot on the pathway one step at a time. And some of us do very devious journeys, and we take lots of little side tracks, and we don't get very far, really. And some of us just are very conscientious about it and go one step after another and go closer to our pathway, which is really, to me, I think enlightenment is letting go of all the things we believe that are not benefiting us in life, or the barriers to our life, to the good things in life, and to release them one by one and to think, I don't have to believe that anymore. Or do I want to believe that anymore? And making a conscious choice. When we can understand that every single thing we believe has been a choice, and it may or may not be true. It can be true for you and not for you. Because it's your belief system and your belief system, and then I have my belief system. I say a lot, that may be true for you, it's not true for me. I may not say that out loud, but people are doing things or saying things, and I think that to myself a lot. And also, it has nothing to do with me. Whatever's going, that has nothing to do with me, because I'm under the law of my own consciousness. This is my pathway. And you have your pathway, you have yours, everybody does. So we're all on a journey, and I think the more conscientious we are about it and the more conscious choices we make, the better our journey is, or the easier, or the swifter, or we get more goodies, or we have better health, all that stuff. But when I was beginning to work with people in the early days, I paid very close attention to what people said. And it became a habit with me, and I still do. I listen to what people say more than, you know, the words they're using and everything. And so often I think, oh, if you just wouldn't use those words, if you just take those three words out of your vocabulary, because people use negative words a lot, the same ones over and over again. Yes, I hear words, more than other people.
What words would you take out of the vocabulary?
Well, should, to begin with. That's a big one. Because every time you say should, you're making yourself wrong. Either you were wrong, or you are wrong, or you're going to be wrong. So take that one out completely. And just a lot of negative expressions that people use. I'm not good enough, or this will never work, or oh, it's a rotten day. Or, you know, there's just tons of expressions, and we use them over and over again, and they don't do us any good at all. Everybody's journey is individual, because we start from different places, so we can't all be having the same journey. But I think we all get certain ahas, and that's when we've sort of learned something. We say, oh, okay, and then if we can keep that, what we've learned, and practice it, then we've made another step and we can move forward. Yes, it's a lifetime journey, and we never stop learning. I'm 80 and I'm still learning. Though the lessons are easier now than they used to be. I like to think of that when we start, we have all these boulders in front of us on our pathway, and we start to get the boulders out of the way, and you finally get to the point where it's gravel. And gravel you can handle, you know, and you can sweep gravel, and you can do things. So, and then occasionally there's an old boulder.
Rolls back into your path.
You think, oh, I thought I had that one, but not completely. And you know, also I think that when we learn lessons, we think, oh, I've learned that one, it'll never happen again, I've done that, that's it. Well, how do you know you've done it unless it comes by once more and see how you react? Have you really learned it? Is it really nothing for you? Have you gone beyond that? Or are you going to go right back into the same old reaction? See, we're never wrong. That's what we need to learn that. We're always doing the best we can with the understanding and awareness and knowledge we have at that moment. I have a very firm belief that only good lies before me. And with that belief, it doesn't matter what comes, because it'll be only good. And I want it to be new and different and exciting and stuff. No, I'm in my 80s now, and new things are happening. So let it roll.
It is so lovely to come together with those like you who are willing to chew with us endlessly out here on this leading edge of thought. We have literally, you're not kidding you, taking thought beyond that which it has been before. And it is our desire that you relax and allow yourself the benefit of this expansion. You don't need us. You don't even need to know any of this. All you need is to want to feel good and to be willing to find something that does. Because you set it up so well before you got here. You're an extension of something so wonderful. And it is inevitable that things go well for you. And your life extracts from you clarity. And the resources of Source assist you all day, every day. And this little bit of conscious awareness will serve you all of the days of this physical life. Be easy about it. Don't make a big thing about it. Don't seek healing, just seek relief. Don't seek improvement, just seek relief. Don't seek solution, just seek relief. Just hold in your mind the idea of the stream that is flowing mightily toward all of the things that you want, and then just figure out how to get yourself going with the flow. And if you'll focus upon that and that alone, everything that you've dreamed for will manifest so quickly that it won't be the end of your dreams, you greedy little buggers. For each new thing that comes will bring with it a vantage point from which you will want again. And so it will always be. It always has been and always will be. There is great love here for you. And for now, we remain. Know any of this. All you need is to want to feel good and to be willing to find something that does. Because you set it up so well before you got here. You're an extension of something so wonderful. And it is inevitable that things go well for you. And your life extracts from you clarity, and the resources of Source assist you all day, every day. And this little bit of conscious awareness will serve you all of the days of this physical life. Be easy about it. Don't make a big thing about it. Don't seek healing, just seek relief.
Don't seek improvement, just seek relief. Don't seek solution, just seek relief. Just hold in your mind the idea of the stream that is flowing mightily toward all of the things that you want, and then just figure out how to get yourself going with the flow. And if you'll focus upon that and that alone, everything that you've dreamed for will manifest so quickly. But it won't be the end of your dreams, you greedy little buggers. For each new thing that comes will bring with it a vantage point from which you will want again. And so it will always be. It always has been and always will be. There is great love here for you. And for now, we remain. And for now, we remain incomplete. Desire something and you don't believe it, or you don't see a way for it to be, when you want something but you doubt it, those desires are not feeling so fresh and sweet to you, are they? But a desire that is not muted by your doubt, a desire that is carried on the stream of your knowledge of who you are and your expectation of things always working out for you, a desire that is fostered in that environment is, oh, such a sweet desire, yes? A desire that is not muted by your doubt, a desire that is carried on the stream of your knowledge of who you are and your expectation of things always working out for you, a desire that is fostered in that environment is, oh, such a sweet desire, yes, forward into this physical experience. A desire that is carried on the stream of your knowledge of who you are and your expectation of things always working out for you. A desire that is fostered in that environment is, oh, such a sweet desire, yes? We'll be right back. if only you could maintain your innocence of well-being and your true understanding that the entire universe works in concert to assist you. You are source energy in these physical bodies, you know that? You are source energy that has projected a part of itself forward into this physical experience. But you did not project all of you into this physical experience, just an idea of you. Care about the way you feel, then you're going to begin to understand that your desires can feel as sweet and intoxicating and compelling as they did the day you were born. And as you more deliberately care about the way you feel, then you're going to begin to understand that your desires can feel as sweet and intoxicating and compelling as they did the day you were born. If only you could maintain your innocence of well-being. You are source energy that has projected a part of itself forward into this physical experience. But you did not project all of you into this physical experience, just an idea of you. In other words, who you really are, the larger part of you, is non-physical energy. And that larger part of you is still and will eternally be starry-eyed.
If you are listening to this and you are a woman and you feel that you dance to a different drummer, then you are probably a mistaken zygote. The zygote fairy is the one that carries the fertilized ovums through the sky in a basket. And when you were being carried to your destination, you were probably jumping up and down in that basket and you were just thrilled to be alive and could hardly wait to be implanted and to come to life, full life, and be born. Well, you were probably one of those people who got so excited about being implanted that you jumped and you jumped until you fell out of the basket and got implanted in a family that was not meant for you. Your family was probably another 2 or 3 miles on. And as a result, when you grew up, you always had this feeling you're somehow born into the wrong family. And that's the mistaken zygote theory, and that's a very important concept because the wild woman energy comes most for those who seem to grow up with mothers and fathers who look at them and don't understand how this person got here, who this person is, and how to raise them. For the wild woman archetype, there's usually tremendous suffering involved in the human life, in the human woman who stands in front of this particular archetype. Often from the time they are babies, they are taken captive, domesticated, told that they're not right, they're wrong-headed and improper. It could be that because most baby children until very recently were born in drugged births, they were schedule-fed, toilet-trained too early. They were handled like animal offspring whose mothers had died or who had deserted. They were trained to remain contained, to never really spread their wings, and especially never to find those who were like themselves. That was considered very, very dangerous. The domestication of the wild continued. So young females are taught to not like spit and moistness, sweat, and other effluvia. And out of the many possibilities of what it means to be female, only two aspects were given weight. Tis the sweet mother who always takes care and shows concern for everything and everybody, and the know-nothing maiden who is always sweet, cute, and innocent. Which leaves out the whole instinctual and animal nature of a woman. Yet by the time most women who were raised as captive creatures, by the time they were teenagers, they were exposed to art cinema. They were exposed to Latin poets. They were exposed to things and ideas, and often lovers even, who asked them to please be a full person. And so the veils that were laid down to keep the girls separate from their animal nature, sometimes they were torn and certainly wavered. And although many girls were raised in an orthodox religion such as Roman Catholicism or Judaism or Fundamentalist Baptist, by the time they were teenagers, particularly in the 60s and 70s, their religious faith was damaged. The hold of the religious symbols on young women of that time was slipping away because the sensuality of those women, which is not only sexual but also creative, was calling to them more and more strongly all the time. And the thou shalt nots of their religion were as much a part of the cage that they had experienced as their familial injunctions were. So many, many women during that time, not just in America, but in Europe as well, threw over the old order, said, no, I won't be caged anymore. I want to be free. And they went out for the first time in their family line into the world. There's a Russian story called Vasilisa. It's Russian, Romanian, Yugoslavian, Polish. It goes through all the Baltic countries as well. Vasilisa lives with a stepmother and two stepdaughters, and of course the stepmother and the stepdaughters really don't like her at all. In one way because she's very lovely, very pretty, very innocent. But she's, you know, she's sort of a goody two-shoes too, you know, and tell her to go sweep the hearth and she does it without complaining. And tell her to go sleep in the corner and not by the fire. And she does it, and she doesn't complain. Well, one day, stepmother and the stepdaughters conspire, and they decide they're going to get rid of her for once and for all, because they really just can't tolerate her. She's sort of stuck up on top of the whole thing, without really meaning to be. And they say, let us conspire to make the fire go out, and then let us send Vasilisa into the forest to Baba Yaga, the witch, to get fire for our hearth. And when she gets to Baba Yaga, Baba Yaga will kill her and eat her. So that evening, when Vasilisa comes home from gathering wood, the whole house is dark. And she's very concerned. She says to her stepmother, what has happened? What will we do to cook with? What will we do to light the darkness? The stepmother says, you stupid child, obviously we have no fire. And I can't go out into the woods because I am old, and my stepdaughters can't go out into the woods because they are afraid. So you are the only one who can go out into the forest and find Baba Yaga and get a coal to start a fire with. And Vasily says, well, all right. Well, okay, I'll do that. And she goes out into the woods, and the woods get darker and darker, and sticks crack under her feet and scare her. And she reaches down into the pocket of her apron. And the pockets of the aprons are very long and very big. And inside the pocket is a doll, a little doll that her mother, her real mother, has given her. Her real mother has died, but this is what her mother left her. And Vasilisa pats the doll in her pocket and she says, oh, I feel so much better. I feel better. And at every fork in the road, she would reach down in her pocket and she would consult the doll. And she said, well, should I go to the left or should I go to the right? And she sensed that the doll would say yes or no or left or right. And she followed what she felt was emanating from the doll. Now, Baba Yaga is a very fearsome creature. Baba Yaga travels in a cauldron. Not a chariot, not a coach, not on a horse, but in a cauldron that flies all by itself. And she sweeps out her tracks of where she's been with a broom that she carries in the cauldron. And the cauldron goes flying through the sky with Baba Yaga's long nose that reaches the tip of her chin. And she has warts, and she has long, greasy, gray hair. And she has long, long, yellow, thick fingernails. Baba Yaga lives in a house that's even more peculiar. She lives in a house that is on chicken legs. And the house walks around. The chicken legs are huge. They're giant chicken legs. And the house walks about and sometimes twirls about. And the house is surrounded by a fence. And the fence is made out of the spinal columns of dead people. And on top of each picket of the fence that's made out of spinal columns is a skeleton's head. And out of the skeleton's head, out of its eyes and its nose cavity, its mouth and its ear holes, comes light. So that Baba Yaga's house is surrounded by a circle of light that emanates out of hundreds of skulls of people that she has killed. Vasilisa sees a glow far away in the forest and realizes this must be the house of Baba Yaga. And she consults with her doll and she says, is this so? And somehow the doll seems to answer and say, yes, it is. And before she's gotten anywhere near close to the house, Baba Yaga descends in her cauldron and says, what do you want? And the girl said, I come for fire. My house is cold. My people will die. I need fire. Baba Yaga says, oh, you useless child, to let the fire go out. It's a terrible thing. What makes you think I should give you fire? She consults her doll, and she says to Baba Yaga, because I ask. Baba Yaga says, you're lucky. That was the right answer. And Vasilisa feels very lucky that she gave the right answer, but she doesn't know how she did that. Baba Yaga says, well, I can't possibly talk to you about giving you fire until tomorrow morning. In the meantime, I have a task for you. If you can perform this task, I'd be more than happy to give you fire. Vasilisa says, what is the task? Baba Yaga points over to the side yard where there's a great big mound of dirt. And she says, in that pile of dirt over there, there are poppy seeds. There are thousands. There are millions of poppy seeds. And I want in the morning to have one pile of poppy seeds and one pile of dirt. I want them separated out from each other. And Vasilisa almost faints. She says, oh my God, I'm not going to do that. She reaches down in her pocket, touches the doll. And the doll tells her, don't worry about it. We'll take care of it. Baba Yaga goes to sleep that night. And Vasilisa tries to start picking the poppy seed out of the dirt. She gets sleepier, sleepier, and sleepier. And when she awakens in the morning, she's so startled. She goes, oh my gosh, I fell asleep. Oh my gosh, I'm going to be killed. I didn't get the job done. And she looks, and there's a wonderful pile of poppy seeds. and there's a wonderful pile of dirt right next to it. Vasilisa says, oh my. Baba Yaga comes out of her house and says, well, lucky for you. You were able to do that. Well, I'll tell you what. Here, you take this skull on a stick and take it home with you. There's your fire. Don't ask any questions. Just be on your way. Vasilisa starts to thank her, but the little doll in her pocket sort of jumps up and down a little bit. And Vasilisa realizes that she mustn't thank Baba Yaga. She just must take the fire and go. And so she goes through the woods, and she turns at every crook in the road that the doll tells her to. And night falls, and so she's coming through the forest with the head, the skull on a stick, with fire coming out of its eyes and its mouth and the nose cavity and its ear holes. And she gets closer and closer to her house and closer and closer. And the stepmother and the two stepdaughters look out the window and they see this glow in the forest and they can't imagine what it is because they have figured, you know, Vasilisa's been gone so long that she must be dead by now. And Vasilisa comes closer and closer to the house. And the mother and the stepdaughters are so horrified to see a disembodied skeleton with fire coming out of its ears and its eyes and its nose cavity and its mouth, that they go into a faint. And when at last Vasilisa comes in the door, feeling triumphant and wonderful because she has survived this terrible adventure and she has brought fire, the skull leaps out of her hand, leaps onto the stepmother and the stepdaughters, and burns them into cinders. This is a story of the feminine spirit guided by intuition.
I am Velocity Child, and every Friday at the stroke of midnight, ride the broomstick with Fallen Woman. A weekly psychic fusion of forward thoughts, far out ideas, magical foray, and spellbinding song. Stirring up the cauldron at Radio Free Brooklyn.